So last time we began to survey some of the halachic details of Shehiya, of Simulation Gimel Sif Alf. Let's wrap up the balance of the major issues now. You remember the way we had laid out, essentially, the way the Shulchan lays it out, there is an Isser of Shehiya, that's already a Mishnah at the end of the first parak of Masech HaShavis, and the opening Mishnah Lamed Vav, the opening Mishnah of the third parak, already starts talking about solutions. How could I be matir the Isser Shehiya? And we saw that there are a total of five solutions, and let's go jump from there into our specific topics today. The way we left everything last time, there are a total of five solutions, at least within a Kira, within a standard oven, and we consider all of our ovens to be Kiros. Now we assume that we have no oven or almost no oven is the equivalent of a superheated tanur. So in a Kira, there are five kulas. Number one, if the fuel is insubstantial, there's nothing really you could adjust, like kash or gavava, that's not a problem. That makes you think perhaps of a non-adjustable blech as well. So definitely what to think about. It's sort of the same concept, that's just not adjustable. If you have a paper fire, a straw fire, kash or gavava, there's nothing to poke, there's nothing to adjust. You're going to poke it, you're not going to get better heat. Yeah, and if you try to poke, poking wouldn't even help you. I mean, obviously, fire is going to go for some time.
The point is that poking won't help you. The point is that it goes out quickly. That's not a strong flame.
I thought both. I could be wrong. I thought both.
It goes out quickly and what else?
There's nothing to poke. It's not nitan lechitoy. There's nothing to adjust. If you have coals, you can stoke the coals, get more heat on them. But if it's just a paper fire, or it's a straw fire, you have dry leaves that are burning. There's nothing to work with. Sometimes it could be a situation where you have no interest or you have insufficient interest in adjusting. And that's where we get to the kula number two, depending on whether you hold a chanayin or the chachamim. Either only once you got to the point of mitstamek viralo, where any added heat just makes it worse, for sure, even according to the chachamim, there's no motivation to want to stoke the fire. If anything, you want to dial the fire down. According to Hananya, it's much earlier. As soon as you cross the Machal Ben Drusai threshold, it's still not even fully cooked, but it's already minimally edible. You still have some motivation to want to accelerate the cooking, but already the motivation is more limited. It is already edible. I could take it off now. I could eat now if I needed to. So Hananya says it's already, even though I haven't eliminated the motivation entirely, once I get the Machal Ben Drusai ready, of the limit, the motivation to be mechate is limited enough. There's no longer iser of shehiya. Then we have the din of chai, which we're going to get back to momentarily. That if you put in a piece of, if it's absolutely raw, or at least a piece of it is absolutely raw, so there's very limited motivation or no motivation to want to stoke the coals, to want to adjust anything, because after all, it's not even going to have, we'll see in a moment, it's not even going to help. Then you have number three, number four is grufa ktuma, which we spoke about at some length last week, which for us means putting on a blech or putting on a piece of aluminum foil, covering the fire or removing the coals, pushing the coals to the side according to the round, where you have presumably a heker to stop. It may be possible to do chitoy, and I may have motivation to do chitoy, but there's something that's going to stop me from doing chitoy. And then finally, the case of smicha, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes as well. If it's not agave eish, then that is mutter. That's just sort of the rundown. Shehiya is aser, but if it's kashuk vava, it's mutter. If it's mitzvah of viralo, it's mutter. According to Hanani, even if it's just any point after machal ben drusai, zichaticha chaya is mutter, rufaktuma is mutter, and smicha. Any of those five is already reason enough, sufficient grounds to be mutter. Any of those five kulas in place, there's no iser of shehiya. So last time we spoke a fair amount about what we just listed off as number two and number four. The question of at what point, chanan and chachamim, and we spoke about grufa of tumah. So let's talk a little bit about chai, and let's talk a little about smicha. And if you have time, we'll also talk about the issues of al-gabi ha-ishmamish, the need for a grate, and the shachach v'shaha. So number one is the question of chai. question of Chayes. That's the Gemara in the first parak. That's what they send you. That's Daf Yud Ches. One of the first parak says, yes, he is usher, but if you have a Kidra Chaisa, and the food is raw, or at least a raw chunk, the chalent's already going, but right before Shabbos, I threw in a raw slab of meat. So most of the chalent is not in that raw. It may even be, close to Machal Ben Yisrael, past Machal Ben Yisrael, it's Machal Tal Tzarka, whatever it is. But since there's a raw slab of meat in there, so that makes the whole thing mutter, no concern, no need for grufa uktuma. And the Mishnah Berurah points out, the piece of meat might be hot, but it's still raw. It may have been sitting there for 15 minutes and the outside of it is warm. And the outside of it may be above Yad Soled as well, but it's still raw. It takes more than... At one point is a good question. At what point do you say it's no longer... It's already a problem, we're already getting close to Machal Ben Yisrael, and you don't have the Heter of Chai. So the Beis Yosef, as you saw, raises an interesting issue. He says, look, Rishonim tends to say, the bulk of Rishonim say, the whole idea of Chatik HaChai, it's simply in the Gemara, is I have no, as I was saying before, I have no motivation to do Chitoi because Mimanoshach. Even if I don't stoke it, it'll be ready for tomorrow. And even if I do stoke it, it's not going to be ready for tonight. This raw, I put a raw slab of meat in the pot 20 minutes before Shabbos starts. It's going to take hours to cook. Hours! If I don't stoke it, it'll be ready at 3 o'clock in the morning. If I do stoke it, it'll be ready at 1 o'clock in the morning. Shkoyach. It'll be ready at 11 o'clock at night. I'm not waiting that long. And anyway, if I don't stoke it, it'll be certainly ready in time for tomorrow morning, the Revach. So there's no gain. There's absolutely no motivation to stoke the Mimonim Shach. Either way, I can eat it tomorrow, and I cannot eat it tonight. That seems to be that's the standard approach. That's the Derech HaMelech, and we showed him in terms of understanding the logic of Kidra Chaisa. Now, the Beis Yosef is very excited, though. He found a Pirush HaMishnah, so the Rambam. What did the Rambam say? Open up, and it's there. Paragimel Mishnah Aleph, and our Mishnah, Rambam. It's fascinating. The Rambam went out of his way to mention this. It's not a Chai is not a line in the Mishnah, but he's going through some of the dinim of the Mishnah. So he throws in Grufa Ketumah is Matir and Chai is Matir. And the Rambam says if you have a piece of meat or vegetables. He says vegetables. What type of vegetables? Vegetables aren't going to be ready for tonight. What type of vegetables? 15, 20 minutes, an hour. A slab of meat is one thing. Vegetables. The Beis Yosef says, wow, we have real Machlokes Rishonim on our hands. It seems like the Rambam had a different approach. It seems like the Rambam thinks that it's not about this practical consideration, I have no motivation. It seems like it's more like a Grufa Ketuba type of idea. It's like a hacker. I demonstrated that you put something in, that was like a formal demonstration that I'm not this pile is off limits. I'm putting raw food right before Shabbos. But even though all you put in is tomatoes, carrots, and they could be ready in time, but the act, it's not so much the fact that it's there as much as the act of putting it in. The act of doing that maisa, that pu'ula, right before Shabbos, and you threw in something raw into the fire, that was a way of showing this is long-term food. Even though, practically speaking, the vegetables could be ready for tonight, and particularly if I stoke the fire, it'll be ready more quickly for tonight. And that's what the Beis Yosef says. I'll take questions in a couple moments. Now, that's the Beis Yosef. Okay, Beis Yosef says, Machlokes Rambam and others. The truth is, if you look in the Yad HaChazaka, if you look in Hilchos Shabbos, the Mishnah Torah, Perek Tes, the Rambam actually writes the exact language that the Beis Yosef uses for the other Rishonim, for Shaar Poskim. He says, Aver, a raw limb, a chunk of meat. He doesn't say anything in Mishnah Torah about vegetables. So I have to tell you what I thought when I saw it. And then you look at the case of Mishnah, wow, Rambam in Mishnah Torah seems to be very different than Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayis. And Beis Yosef doesn't say anything about Rambam in Mishnah Torah, just quotes Perush HaMishnayis. So I said, let's see what Rabbi Yosef Kara has to say. The same Yosef Kar wrote the Beis Yosef in the Torah, wrote the Kesef Mishnah the Rambam. It's fascinating. He says there, in the Beis Yosef, he doesn't mention the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos. You look in Kesef Mishnah, he says, even though the Rambam here wrote Evrachai, well, look in the Perush of Mishnayos, where he said Basar or Irachas. So clearly, he continues to assume that the Perush of Mishnayos is dispositive. The Perush of Mishnayos is a decisive statement whether our position is. He happens not to have mentioned vegetables in the Mishnah Torah. So I have to tell you, my initial reaction when I saw that is, and this is, I think, an important methodological tool, when you come across divergence, every once in a while you do come across a divergence between the Rambam and the Perush of Mishnayos and the Rambam and Mishnah Torah. Now, you have to know when he wrote the Perush of Mishnayos when he was younger. Later on, there are a number of writers on Rambam who believe that writing Perush of Mishnayos was part of the Rambam's self-preparation for writing the Mishnah Torah. That he was an incredibly organized man, extraordinarily organized man, and he had thought this out in advance. And that's why the Rav Shalat and others think that he's already planning to ultimately get to, that was sort of like the end goal was to write a Mishnah Torah, but he prepared himself. For some of the preliminary steps, we're working through Mishnayos thoroughly and beginning to write Kitzurim of Torah Shel Peh, arranged by Mishnayos, and sort of that was like sort of part of the prep. He did that when he was younger. So every once in a while there'll be someone raise a kasha, there's a steer between the Rambam and Perush of Mishnayos for the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah. So Rav Kafach, who did a fresh retranslation of the Perush of Mishnayos, Perush of Mishnayos written in Arabic, everything, the only halachic work the Rambam wrote, only major Torah work the Rambam wrote in Hebrew is Mishnah Torah. Everything, just about everything else we have, there's some letters he wrote in Hebrew. He always responded to people in the language in which they wrote to him. If he wrote to him in Hebrew, he would respond to him. If he wrote to him in Arabic, he would respond to Arabic. But in terms of the major works, everything is Arabic except for Mishnah Torah. So everything else, if you're reading Hebrew, that means you're reading someone's translation. Translations could be of varying qualities. So Rav Kafach did a fresh retranslation direct from the Arabic with his Masoros and with access to much better Kisveyad. And it's often very different. I would always recommend learning, opening the Masada Rav Kook edition of Perush of Mishnayos to get Rav Kafach's translation. It's often very, very different. At the very least, most of the translators, the classic translators, at the very least, you're not going to get flowing Hebrew syntax because they're using... Most of them would translate word for word. You sort of have Hebrew words but Arabic sentence structure, which is why whenever you try to learn a lot of the old translations of different Arabic svarim, whether it's Perush of Mishnayos or Kuzrim or Nevuchim, Chovos HaLevavos, it sort of reads funny. Like all the sentences are like weird. I feel like you're reading Greek or reading German. In a sense, all the word order is weird. It's because most of the translators try to be like a literal word for word translation, which the Rambam himself writes in letters, not the way to go. You want to translate sentence by sentence, maybe even paragraph by paragraph. Ira Kaplan translates Derech Hashem. He says he's doing it paragraph by paragraph. So Rav Kafach's translation is definitely much more readable, much clearer. Often there are differences in terms of accuracy, whether it's a question of a better Ksav Yad or a better, more accurate translation of the Arabic. And then there's one more twist. Rav Kafach had access to much of the Perush of Mishnayos. The Rambam's own Perush of Mishnayos in the Rambam's own hands. And over the years, he noticed that there were often changes. And he worked that over the years that the Rambam had gone through four editions of his. He had written the Perush of Mishnayos originally and then revised it three times. So there are four versions of the Perush of Mishnayos over the course of Rambam's lifetime. And Rav Kafach over the years developed even the sensitivity to be able to recognize the handwriting. The handwriting from him is in his 30s and his 40s. Like to know from the handwriting subtle changes of the Rambam's handwriting over the years to be able to recognize which era it's from, which edition, which revision it's from. So oftentimes when there's a difference between the Rambam in Perush of Mishnayos and the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, you'll look in the Rav Kafach's Perush of Mishnayos and he'll tell you, well, that's because the Perush of Mishnayos that got spread around was based on the earlier revisions. If you look at the later revisions, he already made that change. So it's clear the Rambam changed his mind, not stir up. He changed his mind. He was an honest man. For instance, actually, Me'inyan Adiyoma, now Rosh Hashanah Yom Kodem Lachag, near the end of the first parak of Maseches Pesachim, in the Chinas Kanakonim, The Mishnah is talking about Tumah and Tahara, so the Rambam makes a shift. I don't want to get too a far afield in terms of the rules of Chevrei Kachal, whether it applies only to metal or to all materials except for pottery. So the Rambam, the Rav Kafach, documents. In the earlier years, he followed the position of Rashi and Tosfos, and you could see at later points in life, he crossed it out and changed it. And the changed version is what appears in the Mishnah Torah. So I was hoping for that here. You see a difference between Perush Rashi's and Mishnah Torah, you should always look at Rav Kafach, and I was disappointed. If there are no footnotes. At first, maybe he retranslates, the translation is the same, and there are no footnotes about any changes. But then I looked earlier in the Pirush Mishnayos. Now he does earlier make it earlier in that paragraph. He makes it clearer that the point is because you put that piece of meat in there, it's sort of out of your mind. So I think, maybe the because the Mishnah had an old translation that didn't have that line in it. I looked back at the old translation because the Mishnah, the old version is even clearer. The old version says at the beginning of the paragraph Nisyashu. It says explicitly, you're putting in the raw stuff. So you're a miyayish from it. That does not sound like a hecker. That really sounds like you're giving up hope. In other words, you know that you're not going to be able to eat this anyways from the arrows. It's a lost cause. Yayish. It's hard to know. I don't have a mahalaf. I'm not sure why Yosef Kar was so... At the same time, Ram does talk about vegetables. But from earlier context, it seems pretty clear that it's all about, it's not just a formal act of hecker, it's really something you've just given up hope on. It sounds like the standard approach. So that may be an answer. Could be. But the Rambam is talking about this, you need to do more culinary history than I have access to at the moment. I haven't done historical culinary research in a couple of years since we learned challah, which was a number of years ago. But because we've shown him, if you learn challah, you learn the sugyas of lechem, whether it's matzah or hamotzi, paspo bekisnin, or hafashas challah, they use all these terms, these French and German terms. You gotta know what they're talking. If you don't know what they're talking about, then you didn't learn tesis. So there are histories of culinary histories. So you gotta look back. It could be that the Rambam was. Maybe the Rambam, you gotta look what were they eating in North Africa. 900 years ago. It could be there were root vegetables that were very thick. And it really would take hours and hours and hours. Could be. That is a possibility. It would solve another problem. Guys had asked last week, there's a little bit of a steer in Rambam. Several guys had asked. On one hand, here the Rambam is a bit. But Sosik says, oh, look, here the Rambam is saying, there's just pure hecker. I can even put in vegetables. And yet, when it comes to Gurufa, the Rambam is the one who says you got to shovel all the coals out, as opposed to the Rambam just put them to the side. So there it sounds like it's not just a bad hecker. So there are other ways out of it. For instance, I think if you look around the Perush Mishnayos, it sounds like he doesn't think the Gurufa Ketuvim works the same as Chai. They're two different types of ideas. But certainly, if you can be Miyashev, the Rambam, and say that the vegetables also are root vegetables, which are really like meat, so that would be a smooth solution. Be that as it may, halacha lamasa, even though the Beis Yosef does assume the Rambam has a kula, you can put in anything, don't have to ask, that is a practical, a very useful kula. I don't have to throw in a slab of meat, just throw in anything. A slab of meat that's expensive, and who says I have it on hand? If I could just take a cherry tomato and throw it in 3 minutes before Shabbos, that's a whole lot cheaper and easier. So, but Avram says, possibly like the Beis Yosef, Befrat, that we understand, if it's not 100% clear whether Avram even holds, it does seem like, even though he'd never changed the Perush Mishnayos, but certainly read the Mishnah Torah, it doesn't sound like that, because the Mishnah is convinced that he didn't change his mind. One could imagine saying that he did. Be that as it may, even the Beis Yosef says, but Rov Rishon don't hold that way. So Lamaisa, you can't throw in cherry tomato. It has to be a hunk of meat. It has to be something, or maybe a root vegetable. Something that would really not cook for a very long time. It's really about practically, as Rambam himself says, Nisyashu Hemen. And I think we began to talk about this in the last chabur, two chaburs ago. It's because of that way of thinking that Henkin and others, Henkin the Rav, suggest that this din really no longer practically applies to us, because our ovens are far hotter, far more consistent than a coal stove, and almost anything can get cooked within. And maybe our sudas go longer than the old days. Hard to know. Maybe we have more food. We can afford more food. We can afford more courses. So the suda takes longer. The fires are hotter and more efficient. So there are even the slab of meat, you put it on right before Shabbos, you could get it. Maybe it won't be well done. You could definitely get it edible by the time you're, but before you're, it's too late to hit dessert. And you could still serve it for the main. So that's why, and the truth is, that's what it sounds like in the next siman, Reish Nun Dalet Se'if Zayin. That's what it sounds like. Reish Nun Dalet, sort of a continuation of Shehiyah. We talk about Shehiyah with grilling and roasting. Is it Zion? No, it's not Zion. In Reish Nun Dalet, it sounds like. In Reish Nun Dalet, sounds like if it's the sort of thing that you have it sleep, the meat is gonna grill. So if the fire is hot enough that the meat will grill, so even if you put it on right before Shabbos, that's still a problem. If you see the beginning of Siman Reish Nun Dalet, that's the opening line. I'm sorry, it's not Siv Zayin, Siv Aleph. Reish Nun Dalet, even though Basar Chai is Mutzul L'Shahos, that's how the Shulchan Aruch starts. That's in a pot. If you're grilling it, right, an open flame, then it's a problem because that's Memaher Les Bashel. So that's Beferish. That's Beferish. And that's our stovetops with pots are the same as their sleep. Okay, so that's some of the issues that revolve around the question of Chai. Let's take a couple of questions and we'll move on to the question of Smicha. Yeah.
So before we get to our ovens, like when we're saying halacha l'maaseh, so you should have to put in a piece of raw meat, would a tough root, would that also count?
If it's something that, whatever the matzias is, if it's the sort of thing that no matter how much you stoke the fire, will not be ready for tonight, so that's fine. The same as meat. It's not halacha l'maaseh, it has to be meat, but the point is just it has to be the sort of thing that's tough enough that no matter how much you poke around, it's not getting ready for tonight's suda.
Right. And if it's something like a slow cooked ribs or something, or like a chalice, like does that like what you know won't
cook? So that's a good point. You're saying in a slow cooker, that is a good point. You say if I have a chalice, I have a crock pot. So no matter how, even if I turn it up to the highest heat, it will take a long time. Yeah, that's a good point.
Is that a utensil or is that a type of dish?
No, I mean a utensil.
Oh, so it means the cooker itself?
The cooker. The cooker is a slow cooker. Now, even if you turn the dial to 5, whatever the highest setting.
Do you have like a smoker or something like that?
No, but I mean, even say like an oven, you can put on 200 if you want to make like a brisket or something.
But on the other hand, for the oven, since you could turn it.
Right.
That's the concern. Maybe I'll turn up to 450. But the crock pot, if it's true that even on the highest setting of the crock pot, it still will take hours and hours and hours to cook this raw slab of meat, it won't be ready until 11 o'clock at night, even if I leave it on the highest setting. If that's true, gotta measure that. So then in the chanami, then the old din is still relevant. Right. So then you have a metzias. You have Chazal's Matthias Bismanaz as well. Yeah.
Are we throwing out the idea of Nigger? Or no?
Hecker is definitely relevant to Grufa Ktuma. The question is, but we assume that's not relevant to the Kula of Chai. That's what even the Beis Yosef, who thought the Rambam thought it is, but man, we all agree, when all dust settles, we don't pass. Even the Rambam said it, we don't pass him like him. So Chai has to be more than a Hecker. Chai only works if it's actually. Something real that I have no motivation to want to stoke it because stoking wouldn't help. Raising the fire wouldn't help. It's still going to take hours and hours and hours to cook the slab. Rufa Ketumah does have to do with that. Presumably does. Presumably does. We pass it against Rashi. We'll get back to a couple minutes. Yeah.
With the chai of the vegetable, when I was learning it, I was thinking perhaps because these vegetables can just constantly be cooked, meaning at some point they just don't go bad. I know, like you can keep carrots heated for a day without them ever getting to a point of.
And therefore,
So therefore, I was thinking it would be less on the high and more just that it would never get to a point of being bad. Meaning, if we're afraid that it's going to over.
That's worse. It's not mistamed for
Rala. Right, because...
Does that make it better? That makes it more kala, makes it more chama.
It should make it worse.
No, it's going to make it more chama, I think, yeah.
We're saying that Avitzah did harder than any time before. Why are we saying that Allah Avitzah is still considered a Kiva?
That's interesting. Why would you see if you are ovens as tanur?
Fires are more efficient, not hot.
The difference between a tanur and a kiva back then was chomorah. That it was hotter. You're saying it's not fat in ovens?
No, I don't think our ovens are as hot. They have like the, it sounds like a kiln almost. No?
Yeah. If you've ever gone to I say to do glass blowing. If you ever make a forge, you can make a forge you can make a forge with a couple of bricks in a what's it called? You can make a forge when you're making a bonfire. Right? If you build it right, it will be incredibly hot with them. In a way, like you're saying, that's much hotter than right. Our ovens go to 450, 500, 550. Yeah, a matzah oven, they build up. All right. But right, it's more a question of the delivery. The delivery is efficient. The heat is delivered much more. You don't have a lot of dispersal, and things will cook more quickly, but it's not that the inside of the oven is at a higher temperature.
The difference between the tunnel and the cure is about how hot it is, not how quickly it
is. I believe so. We got to think about it more, though. That is an interesting question. It is an interesting question. I don't think anyone considers that we should consider our... I don't think any post-it says we should consider our ovens tanurim.
Even what about a matzah oven?
So that might be different. I think they talk about that. Post-it talk about the nachtum, the baker's oven maybe is different.
Pizza oven, yeah.
Is a pizza oven that much hotter?
Yeah, if you used it like in a second.
Oh, okay. So that's why they move it between the different shelves. Okay, so that one last question, then let's move on to smicha. Yeah.
Why is the Tanura more machmer than like a
kira? It's because...
No, like even back then, like is it there more of a shami chatzit?
Yeah, it was built differently. It was, right. It was built like a cone with a cut of tap.
I just thought like if it was hotter, you won't just choke it. Like it'll be less light.
Yeah. That's so.
You might be more invested in wanting to stoke it also. So that's where the psychology could work in sometimes the opposite ways. Let's talk a little about smicha. Lamaisa, the Gemara says that the Gemara raises that and says that you're allowed to be someich on a kedera, on a kira she'ena gruf oktuma. In other words, to leave the food on top of the fire, that I need a blech for, unless I have one of the other coolest. But to leave it next to the fire is not a problem. In other words, shehi is only aser al gabi ha'esh. We're going to get to later in the siman. There are other situations of shalo al gabi ha'esh. One situation shalo al gabi ha'esh is when it's off to the side. Another situation of shalo al gabi ha'esh we're going to see is when it's perhaps when it's kedera al gabi kedera. And to put food on top of the chalim pot is not the same as directly on the fire. It's like either be moving away horizontally, smicha, moves to the side, or vertically, it's stacked on top of pot rather than directly on the fire. Then there's no Isser Shehiyah. Mishnah Berurah raises here, and Sif Aleph raises an issue which we're going to hold off on until we get to HaChazara. Mishnah Berurah and Sif Kan Tezvav points out that there's a Machlokes, Nisivos, and Rebbe Akiva Eger. How about... Does smicha also matter hachazara? I could leave food next to the fire from before Shabbos. Next, put it on the counter next to the right next to the yeah. But how about to do hachazara to put the food back on, or how about to put take food out of the fridge? Cooked food. If it's not cooked food, then it's in the bishul prep. But the fully cooked dry food, ein bishul acher bishul, to put it on top of the chalim pot is fine. We'll get that later in the sibin.
to do hachazara and asina al gabe kedera. How about to do smicha? To do take the food out of the fridge and put it next to the fire. How about to put it on a different spot in the blech? Something like that. Is that a problem? Is that not a problem? But that's Mishnah Berurah. That's the big machlokas. How to read a machlokas achronim? How to read the Magen Avraham? It comes up here. The Magen Avraham is talking here. But since it's really a hachazara issue, we'll wait until we get to hachazara to dig into that more. Raise the issue of hachazara being put it back on the fire. And what Rabbi Willel has to call the sinah mechadash, that it wasn't even on the fire. It's been in the refrigerator all Shabbos long. It was cooked on Erev Shabbos, and now I want to put it on the fire. So that it's referenced here, but we're going to get to it when it is topical. One or two more issues, which also a third issue in addition to Chai and Smicha, there's a third issue and a fourth issue. The third issue, which Post can talk about in terms of Shehiya. We assume, and this is one of the five or six issues that come up in this single multi-layered sif, is that based on the Gemara Lamed Zayin going on to Lamed Ches, what's the din? The Gemara asks basically on Lamed Ches, if a very bottom of Lamed Zayin go on to mostly on Lamed Ches and Alf, what's the din if you violated Shehiyah? What's the din b'diavad? Is there a din of Maisa Shabbos? A person cooked on Shabbos, so then there's a Knas that we're not going to allow you to eat it, depending on who and how. Maybe it's for the course of Shabbos, maybe you can't eat it ever. We're going to limit or cut off your ability to benefit from that malacha, and that's a knas to discourage people from violating the din. The Gemara says that there is also a knas in play, not only if you violated bishul, even if it was cooked food. I did it before Shabbos. I was shohei. I left the food on the fire without a blech. There also we say shachach is a problem. Beis Yosef has a lot of back and forth. Lema said the mechaber number one is meiko, that it's only if it was not yet mavushal called tzarko. As if it was already cooked, even if you pass night the chachamim that shehiya is also even mitzdamek v'yafel, but lemaisa your benefit is very minimal. It's already fully cooked. Right? You're benefiting the fact that it got a little more juicy, it got a little more geshmak. That's not such great hana from the Isser. It's true the person violated Shehiya. He left the food on without a blech and a mistamek v'yaflo. He violated Shehiya. But you're not, by eating the food, you're not benefiting that much from his aveira. Because it was fully cooked anyways, if it was fully cooked. So you benefit from the added geshmak. Shulchan Aruch said that already willing to be mekelon. But if he left the food that wasn't fully cooked when Shabbos came in, and because of his Shehiya b'Isra, it got to fully cooked, that's already a problem. Now, remember the Ramah Paskins, like Chananya, at least, but certainly b'Di'evid. Certainly b'Di'evid, we would assume that if there was no blech, but the food was at least a third cooked, then we're not going to, certainly not going to say that you may not eat that food. The Mishnah Berurah and Sifkat Lamed Hey points out that the Ramah here is again involved in Hachazara also. And if a person puts food back on the fire on Shabbos, then already Machal Ben Drusa is not going to help you. Because there is a Machlokas Chanyanya Chachamim, whether Shehiyah is Aser La'achar Machal Ben Drusa. But everyone agrees when we get to Hachazara, that Hachazara is Aser, even La'achar Machal Ben Drusa. That's why the Ramah doesn't talk so much about the Shehiyah. Ramah talks more about if a person was machazir b'iser, they put the food back on the fire without a blech, so then already I will have to step away from that food. Let's just go a little further, then we'll go to questions. One final issue is the Shulchan Aruch raised an interesting issue that he saw came up in Beis Yosef. It's ready to go on him, talk about the following. Shulchan Aruch says, well, this whole business that we said, that if it's already, let's say according to the Ramah, based on Rashi and Balatos, it's already La'achar Machal Ben Drusay. Or even if not, there's a Chai, or so on and so forth. This is all fine if it's on a grate. Remember, the Shulchan Aruch talking about a coal fire. So you have your coals, but then it's on the grill. So the pots on the grill, like we have on a modern stovetop, you have those metal grates. You have a gas grill. You have a gas stovetop. So you have those black metal grates that elevate the pot above the fire, so that we have enough airflow that the gas fire stays on. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if you leave the food like that, that's fine. But, he says, if you leave the food mamish dug into the coals, that's a real problem. Because mamish touching the coals, gewalt. He quotes from the Ron quotes from Gaonim, Rabbi Nachalal says it's a position of Gaonim, the summary Shom adopted, that's called Hatmana. Forget about Shehiyah. If it's mamish touching the coals, ooh, I have a new problem, Hatmana. Now, how does that work? And the Ramah says, not really. And the Rovi Shom seems to say, not really. What's that all about? So just to review Hatmana again, it's come up several times. Let's review Hatmana briefly. We know there's Isra Shehiyah and Achazara. But Shehiyah and Achazara, as we just mentioned moments ago, is only Al-Gabe Ha'esh. Then there's a separate Isra of Hatmana. What does Hatmana mean? Hatmana comes up several times in the Masechta. Hatmana, parallel to Shehiyah and Achazara, there's one version of Hatmana that's Aser even before Shabbos starts. There's another version of Hatmana that's only Aser on Shabbos. On Shabbos, I'm not allowed to wrap up the food to keep it warm, even in a blanket. Let's say the fire goes out half hour into Shabbos, the fire under the soup goes out. So no one, you right away turn off the gas. If you have the gas flowing and there's no fire, that's a constant fashus. If you can turn off the gas, you know, without a muksa problem, you think you could do it successfully with your elbow or your toes, okay. But if you're not sure you can do that, then Hamira Sakanta Meisur, you immediately turn off the gas right away. It's Mamash Sakanta Varus. Turn off the gas, open the windows. Okay. Now the problem is, okay, now we're safe. The problem is, or maybe someone accidentally turned the gas off. Okay, so now it's off. So, but their problem is, one second, the soup. It might be fully cooked, but it's going to start to cool off. People, the men are coming home from shul in a half hour, and then until we end up gets around to the soup, it's going to be another half hour. The soup's not going to be, if you're not piping hot, it's going to be lukewarm at best. So what are you supposed to do? So what people might be tempted to do is, well, once the fire is off, you know, take a blanket and wrap in a blanket. That sounds like a good idea. It will keep your food warm. It will also be a violation of Issur Rabbanan of Hatmana. To fully wrap it, and if it's fully wrapped, cover from all sides, and the covering is in contact with the pot, and it's still in the original pot that you cooked in, it's still in the Kli Rishon, if you have those three conditions in play, that's an Isser of Hatmana. On Shabbos, that is Aser. Again, the definition of Hatmana is it's in the still original pot, and the Kli Rishon is Bashal Bo, and you add an additional layer besides the pot that's in contact with the pot, and that covers it from all sides. That's called Hatmana, Aser on Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, to do that on Shabbos is a problem. To do that on Erev Shabbos is not a problem. To turn off the fire before Shabbos to conserve energy and just wrap your pot in blankets, that's mutter. What's Aser on Erev Shabbos is a higher level of Hatzman. If you do it on Erev Shabbos, it's only Aser if it's what we call most of Hevel. If it's actually adding heat somewhere, there's some addition of heat, not just a blanket just going to conserve heat. That's what we call Ma'amid Hevel. It's maintaining the heat. Hatzmana b'davar hamam and hevel is only usher on Shabbos itself. On Shabbos, all hatzmana is usher. Erev Shabbos is only usher if it's most of hevel. So I think we spoke about the other week. If you have an urn that's on and you cover it with a jacket, that's hatzmana b'davar hamam most of hevel. That's mamish and this is rabbanon. I think I mentioned a Shechner Willow's line. I think Willow's line was, sometimes they sell Rachmal Aslan. They sell in farm stores these nice, look like velvet, like with the gold edging, looks like a filling bag or something, to put on your urns, and you'll have piping hot tea. And they sometimes say Shabbos Kodesh. I'm a kavod Shabbos Kodesh. So sometimes they say Shabbos Kodesh. Right? Willow said they just need to add one word, Chilul Shabbos Kodesh. It's not. It looks very religious, but it's mamish in Issur Rabbanan. Use it. If you turn the urn off before Shabbos, it's fine. But the whole point, people leave their urn on and they cover it. That's mamash hatzmana b'davar most of hevel. That's aser, even if you do it set up from the Erev Shabbos.
That's what the urn is most of
hevel? Yeah, so that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch later on, the siman about hatzmana, that even if you have a, if you, then they talk about you have the food on the coals and it's covered over. So that is considered to be Hatzmana B'davar Amos of Hevel. And that is Usr, even Erev Shabbos. Now, here, that's Reish Nun Zayin Dalad.
Don't they also sell blankets for
flex? No. Reish Nun. If you have stuff on a blech and you cover it with a blanket, okay. It covers it fully, that could be a real problem.
Don't they have special blankets?
It could be if you have something that doesn't, not, it's only hatman, like I said before, if it's covered from all sides and it's touching it.
It's the same halacha for liquid and.
I believe so.
It doesn't matter if it's left or not, meaning if it's left and then a dome.
That's Reishon and Zayin Se'if Ches. Reishon and Zayin Se'if Ches, from Machaber, right? Even though there are ways to be do Shehiya Beheter, let's say it's Gruf Ketuma. However, he says, that's fine if you just leave the pot on the fire with a blech. He says, but Reishon and Zayin Se'if Ches, he says, Emu Mechusin Begadim, if you cover, if you leave it on the stovetop and you cover it with cloth, the cloth itself, the blanket itself, is just inert mamet hevel. It's not adding heat, but that's called, since there's fire below, that's called mosav hevel. And then he goes on to say, but there are ways of doing it. If you could do it beheter, if it's if the clothing doesn't, if you have, let's say you have a blanket that's broader that doesn't touch the pot, that's fine. But if it's going to be wrapped around the pot, that's a problem. But now, with that in mind, let's come back here to Reish Nun Gimel Sif Aleph, where the Gaonim seem to be saying something. With that background in Hatzmana, the Gaonim now say something very surprising. They come back to Reish Nun Gimel, and they say, you better make sure you put the pot on the fire. You better make sure that there's a grate, there's a grill that's raising the pot above the coals. Because if it's in direct contact with the coals, it's a problem of hatmana. And he says, you need it to be Yoshev al Kisei Shel Barzel, or Avonim. But if it's directly on the Gechalim, it's a problem. And Rama says, no, it's Megula Lamaila. Rama says, what do you mean? It's not covered on top? If it's covered all around, okay, that's a problem. That's mana. I understand, but you just have, you have a pot sitting on the coals, but the top is open. Hatzmana is only when it's covered from both sides. So good. The coals in the bottom are in contact with the pot, but the sides and top are open. Right. So that's why many, Ramaz presented the position of many Rishonim who said, I don't understand what the problem is. But Rabbi Hanal and Gaonim, they held that the rule that Hatzmana is only when it's covered from all sides, that's if it's just a davar hamatman. But if it's touching mamish actual coals, then even if it's only touching on one side, that's already hatmana. That was the position of the Gaonim, which the Shulchan Aruch wants to be machmer for. The Rama is mekel, but Shulchan Aruch is machmer. That's another reason to have a blech, is it'll make sure that your flames are not in contact with the pot itself. Now, I think that's also why halacha, that there is a chumrah, I don't think it's required in Ikra Din for this reason, but there is a chumrah that they call in the name of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that, you know, there are two types of crock pots. There's the old school crock pots, they're like it's like a one pot that the other pot fits into, like this. The ceramic bowl, and then the food goes in. Then you have sort of the flat tops. They're the slow cookers. You just have a flat top element, and the pot just sits on it. So in the old school crock pots, the quote from Shlomo Zalman at the end of his life, that he thought that you ought to figure out a way to raise the pot a little bit. You put in silver foil balls, you put in pennies, you put in pebbles. That chumrah that they quote in the name Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that if you have it, the insert, old school insert type of chalon pot, that you want to put something inside the insert and put the pot on the insert so it's raised a little bit, That may be, that sounds like it's based on this type of thinking.
It's still touching on two sides.
So they're touching more, it's still not across the top. But that may be sort of an application of this idea of Rebbe Hananel, that that's, if it's direct contact with Mamish, the element, well, not direct contact because the element's inside, but that seems like Rosh Hashanah Zalman was thinking, what they call Rosh Hashanah Zalman, that Chumrah, that sounds all along the lines of this.